morning we have one case on our 10 o'clock docket, Frequent Flyer versus American Airlines. Ms. Bizak, if you'll introduce counsel.
Before we begin, I would like to apologize to counsel and to the court for keeping everybody waiting. I was locked in my house. The locks broke, and I could not open it from the front door, from the outside, or the inside. And the back door would open only from the outside, and so I couldn't get out until the locksmith showed up to let me out. But I am here, and I will not take it out on anybody. I give you my word.
Thank you, Judge Stefano. Thank you. Mr. Weston.
As the court knows, I represent the appellants in this case. The appellants in this case are Frequent Flyer Depot, a gentleman by the name of George Perkle, who is an officer and owner of Frequent Flyer Depot, and Robert Perkle, who is George's son, who is also an officer and owner of the business. We appeal from a temporary injunction issued in the 67 Judicial District Court on September 19th, enjoining Frequent Flyer Depot from acting as a broker for people who wish to sell their American Airlines Frequent Flyer miles. The Frequent Flyer miles in question are issued by American Airlines when people fly on American Airlines. They're also issued when people fly on other airlines, and they are obtained by individuals through companies to whom American Airlines sells American Airlines Frequent Flyer miles for distribution. The miles, among other things, can be used to purchase flights or acquire flights on American Airlines. Frequent Flyer Depot is a broker of Frequent Flyer miles. What that means is that when people from America who own American Airlines miles or any other airline wish to sell their miles, or someone wishes to purchase a cheaper ticket, they go to the broker puts them together, adds a fee to that, and sells the ticket through the broker. As American Airlines alleges, Frequent Flyer Depot competes unfairly with American Airlines, and American Airlines lost goodwill with the general public, who must buy seats from American at prices higher than those offered by Frequent Flyer Depot. In other words, Frequent Flyer Depot sells tickets for a price lower than American Airlines using American Airlines tickets.
So is their main complaint that Frequent Flyer is being subsidized by Americans' customers who pay full or regular price on tickets?
No, ma'am, I don't believe that is. The argument as presented to the court is that when you become a member of the Frequent Flyer program at American Airlines, there is a term and condition that says you may not barter or sell those Frequent Flyer miles. Their claims against us, the tort claims, which are what's in front of the court, all are based on the fact that there is a contract out there that our clients allegedly are causing the holders of the American Airlines Frequent Flyer miles to breach. So the emphasis is on the existence of the contract. We, as you can tell in our brief, dispute the existence of the contracts. But there are other very substantive issues that we believe exist. And the first one of which is the question of federal law's application to this particular claim and the existence of subject matter jurisdiction in this court and in the lower court in the first instance. There is no question at all under the teachings of the United States Supreme Court in American Airlines versus Wolins that were the roles reversed, were we suing American Airlines for some tort involving Frequent Flyer miles, this court would not have any jurisdiction. That claim would be preempted by federal law, and there would be no jurisdiction. The question before this court arises because American Airlines is the plaintiff, and American is asserting that we are not entitled to the same preemption allowed by federal law, and therefore subject matter jurisdiction exists. In 1978, Congress deregulated the airline industry. They had, for the most part, opened it up to competition, but they allowed certain regulations to continue. In doing so, Congress passed a statute that says that no state can enact, enforce, a regulation, law, or other provision having the force and effect of law related to the price, route, or service of an air carrier. This means that if there is a state law that conflicts with the federal law, with this federal law, it has no effect. In the United States Supreme Court in Maryland versus Louisiana, and the Texas Supreme Court in Bic Penn Corporation versus Carter, which is a 2008 case, the law is clear. If there's a conflict, state law cannot apply. Texas Supreme Court has also said, clearly, if there's a statute that's doing it, it's preempted. Deceptive trade practices have been preempted. The Texas Supreme Court has also said in a context relating to fraud and various other actions against an airline, Delta Airlines, that this preemption also relates to lawsuits. In Delta Airlines versus Black, the Supreme Court in 2003 said the preemption applies to lawsuits.
Well, let me ask this.
Yes, sir.
Back when I was on the trial bench, we had the City of Fort Worth, the City of Dallas, Perspective Legend Airlines, Continental Airlines, all of those were in state court, my court.
Yes.
And
because it's a different nature of
the
claim.
Down the street. Okay. What is the difference?
The difference nature of the claim relates to how the Supreme Court has construed this particular provision. We are strictly dealing with torts based on actions by, in this instance, our clients, or in other instances, actions taken by an airline where they're accused of torts. The Supreme Court has said in American Airlines versus
Warren. Airlines aren't.
Excuse me.
They're probably alleging tortuous interference against you. You're not alleging tortuous interference against them.
But the Supreme Court in American Airlines versus Wolins dealt with the same type of court claims against American Airlines because American Airlines had changed the terms of its frequent flyer program. And the Supreme Court said those torts are out the window because of this preemption provision. You can only be held liable based on any claim any agreement that you reached. So the distinction is there is that we're only dealing with torts, either a tort filed against American Airlines, as in the Wolins case, or a tort that is filed against our client in this case. And I would imagine that in the case that you dealt, there were other laws that were interrelating, but they were separated out from what we're dealing with here. Excuse me. In addition to preempting state law, in this instance, Congress also enacted a very specific provision regulating unfair competition. That is in 49 U.S.C. section 41712A, where the Secretary of the Department of Transportation was given exclusive jurisdiction over unfair competition committed by air carriers, foreign air carriers, and ticket agents. The Department of Transportation receives the complaints, can do it on its own initiative, it investigates, it decides, it enters into sanctions.
Has it been removed?
Excuse me.
To federal court?
Excuse me, I didn't hear what you said.
I said, has this case removed to federal court?
No, Your Honor, we can't because the case law under this specific provision precludes a private cause of action. It does not give a private cause of action. It vests the jurisdiction exclusively in the Secretary of the Department of Transportation. So there is no federal question by which we can remove it, and there isn't diversity jurisdiction, so we could not get it into federal court.
But isn't it justifiable to draw a distinction between what causes of action against an airline need to be brought perhaps in federal court as opposed to when the airline is the plaintiff?
I don't believe so, and the reason I don't believe so is that distinction. If you read the language in Morales, if you read the language in the American Airlines versus Wolins, if you read the statutes, notice such distinction is made. And specifically in the statute that I was referring to previously for relating to unfair competition, it refers to air carriers, foreign air carriers, and ticket agents. as being the parties who are subject to the jurisdiction of the Department of Transportation, and our clients fit the definition of a ticket agent very specifically. It provides that a ticket agent is a person that, as a principal or agent, sells, offers to sell, negotiates for, holds itself out as selling, providing, or arranging air transportation. If you just look at our website, that's what it says we do. We are a ticket agent for the purposes of that statute. That statute is the very statute that applies to American Airlines. There is no distinction in the law created by Congress between us and American Airlines other than they are an air carrier, we are a ticket agent, but we are both in the same statute for the regulatory purposes of the Department of Transportation. The preemption is as broad as the ERISA preemption, which they held in Morales. In Morales, the Supreme Court said attempts by the state's attorney general to enforce basically Deceptive Trade Practices Act won't work. In Wolins, American Airlines was sued by an individual complaining about the fact that American changed the terms of its frequent flyer miles. The Supreme Court said you can't do it because frequent flyer miles relate to rates. In fact, I'll just read what the court said. Plaintiff's claims relate to rates, i.e., American's charges in the form of mileage credits for free tickets and upgrades, and to services, i.e., access to flights and class of service upgrades, unlimited retrospectively applied capacity controls, and blackout dates. The Supreme Court held all of those non-tort claims are gone. You can hold American Airlines to what it agreed to do, but you can't hold them to anything else. There being a preemption under federal law and an exclusive federal remedy under federal law, the Texas Supreme Court says in that instance, in Mills versus Warner Lambert, 157 Southwest 3rd, 424, which is a 2005 case, it says there is no jurisdiction. There is no subject matter jurisdiction. And that is the argument that we're making. The argument probably viably could be made that preemption itself would require a dismissal of the lower court case. But in this instance, because we have both the preemption statute and the exclusive remedy in the Department of Transportation, under the teachings of the Texas Supreme Court, there is no subject matter jurisdiction. Okay. Turning on to the question of delay. The purpose of the injunction is to maintain the status quo. And this relates to both our arguments on status quo and latches and the propriety of issuing the injunction. American Airlines knew about my client in 2002. They contacted my client and acquired from my client domain names that said, buy American Airlines frequent flyer miles. It wasn't that explicit, but it was almost as that explicit, that were connected to our site. They knew we existed there until 2007, 5 years later, they didn't bring suit. Then they're asking for a temporary injunction. They didn't even ask for a hearing on their application for another year. The status quo that we're dealing with is that we have been in business with their knowledge for 8 years before we got around, or excuse me, 6 years before we got around to asking for a temporary injunction. They raise the question, well, you can't allow the status quo, which is an illegality, to continue. We have not been accused of doing anything illegal. We have been accused of committing a tort. They cite the case, this court's decision in Ratkin Title versus Grievance Committee of the State Bar of Texas, where this court correctly held that a status quo, which consisted of a violation of the law, could not be allowed to prevent the issuance of an injunction. But in other instances, where there's an allegation, for example, of a restraint of free speech, or preventing Southwest Airlines from beginning to operate under a certificate of convenience, or the continued violation of election law, status quo prevented the injunctions from being issued because the existing status quo, even in the face of that allegation, was not sufficient to do it. other argument that we have is that American Airlines has written its contract after American versus Woolens to have no binding effect whatsoever. American Airlines may, in its discretion, change the Advantage Program rules, regulations, travel awards, and special offers at any time, with or without notice. American Airlines may make any one or more of these changes at any time, even though such changes may affect your ability to use the mileage credit. What we're saying is, if a claim is based on their contract, and their customers have no rights whatsoever, there's no contract, and there is no tort. We also believe that American Airlines hasn't been injured. They made specific allegations of how we injured them, displacement of passengers. I think I stopped right there.
Thank you so much. Ms. Rotman.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Anna Rotman, and I represent American Airlines. Frequent Flyer Depot and George and Robert Perkle admit their misconduct, admit they knew their conduct is prohibited by American, and admit liability to American. These admissions mean that in this equitable proceeding, where the trial court assessed American's probable right to relief on its claims, appellant's principal argument is that the trial court abused its discretion in balancing their admitted liability against their affirmative defenses, which fail as a matter of law or because the evidence is wholly inadequate. I'll begin by explaining briefly the appellant's misconduct, which they admit, and then I would be happy to discuss the preemption issue as well. The Advantage contract prohibits the sale, purchase, and barter of Advantage miles and award tickets. Frequent Flyer Depot induces repeated breaches of this contract by purchasing miles from Advantage members.
Well, how can they breach a contract that they're not a party to?
They actually induce breaches of the contract, and so our claims are for tortious interference with contract. We also bring claims for fraud and for misappropriation, and the temporary injunction was based on those claims. They admit that since American filed this lawsuit, they've purchased millions of Advantage miles. And in fact, just a couple of days before the hearing, the temporary injunction hearing, they sent an email to potential customers seeking to purchase some 470,000 Advantage miles. Emails such as these were sent to thousands of customers. They use those Advantage miles in order to book Advantage award tickets, which they then sell to their customers. They admit that when they call American to get the tickets or to discuss the Advantage Award tickets, they conceal the fact that the tickets will be sold. They also admit that they instruct their customers to lie to American that the Advantage Award tickets they purchased from Frequent Flyer Depot were gifts, because American does permit Advantage members to transfer tickets as gifts, but the Advantage contract prohibits the sale, purchase, or barter of Advantage tickets. Frequent Flyer Depot admits that they've extracted hundreds of thousands of dollars from the sale of Advantage Award tickets. American earns no money for the ticket from Frequent Flyer Depot or from its customer, but American incurs cost to transport the passenger. 99.9% of the Advantage Award tickets sold by Frequent Flyer Depot are for international travel in first and business class. This is American's most valuable seats. So the appellants caused American probable harm, and there is substantial evidence on the record of this harm. First, Frequent Flyer Depot admits that they refused to stop their conduct. This is imminent harm. An American's manager of the Advantage program testified that Frequent Flyer Depot's conduct disrupts American's business, diverts customers away from American to Frequent Flyer Depot, causes American to lose goodwill, and undermines the program's goals by engendering ill will from customers who are frustrated that they can't get access to award tickets, as opposed to engendering loyalty from customers, which
was
the purpose.
Why can't they get awards tickets?
Because the award tickets are capacity constrained. There aren't award tickets available in unlimited numbers on any flight, and so Advantage members would not be able to get award tickets if Frequent Flyer Depot's customers have already taken those award tickets.
But if all of the people that had earned the awards flew anyway, they wouldn't be able to get them either.
That's correct. If there is a limited number of award tickets that are available, and so on every flight that a Frequent Flyer Depot passenger or customer is taking up one of those seats, a legitimate AAdvantage member cannot have access to that seat.
Well, the truth is that you're banking on everybody that's earned these miles won't use them, whereas the very reason that they're selling them is that they can't use them. So there's more people using earned award miles than would otherwise occur if you restricted them to people that earned them or could give them to a friend. That's the bottom line, right?
It is correct that the number of tickets is capacity.
That's your damage, because otherwise you don't have a damage.
Well, the damage could be, besides the fact that there are people who aren't able to access the tickets, it's also the disruption in general that's caused to to American's business because of the fact that it's spending time servicing Frequent Flyer Depot, responding to their calls about award tickets, when in fact these are not valid tickets. Under the AAdvantage contract, an AAdvantage award ticket that is sold is void. And so you have investigative work that's taking place to try to figure out what Frequent Flyer Depot and others like them are doing. There are other defendants in this suit in the lower court that are engaged in similar business. So you have the investigative side, and then you also have the fact that reservations resources are being diverted from focusing on legitimate customers seeking to purchase tickets or seeking to use valid AAdvantage award tickets. Those resources are being focused instead on these Frequent Flyer customers who are using void tickets.
And if you win this lawsuit, why are these damages not just be able to be calculated and awarded to you?
Because there would be no way to actually be able to calculate the loss of goodwill from customers who are frustrated because they don't have access to the seats that are taken from Frequent Flyer Depot's customers, nor could you actually quantify the loss of goodwill that would be incurred by members of the traveling public who perhaps aren't able to get first or business class seats in international travel, which is a small cabin. And you also wouldn't be able to quantify the disruption to the business that occurs because of the investigation work that has to be done to try to figure out whether or not to try to ascertain AAdvantage award tickets that have been sold. Frequent Flyer Depot testified to the trial court that about 1% of the tickets that they have sold travel has been stopped by American on about 1% of the tickets that they've sold. That means that our investigative work actually ends up not working out very well because it's very difficult to ascertain when the tickets are sold. As I said, they are instructing their customers to lie to American and not tell them that the tickets that they have, the AAdvantage award ticket that they are traveling on, was purchased.
Did you put on evidence? I'm sorry. Go ahead. Did you put on evidence of good loss of goodwill?
We did. There were some objections about the loss of goodwill, but if you would, in the transcript of the in the reporter's record, there was evidence on loss of goodwill. The evidence was uncontroverted because Frequent Flyer Depot did not challenge the trial court's evidentiary findings.
Okay. My question was related to, is there any evidence indicating that a greater number or a greater percentage of those customers who have purchased the Frequent Flyer miles use their tickets as opposed to frequent flyers in general?
I don't believe there's any specific evidence on the record on that point. So just to conclude in terms of the misconduct of the appellants, based on this misconduct and the probable harm, and again, this evidence of harm, loss of goodwill, disruption to business, diversion of customers from American to Frequent Flyer Depot is uncontroverted. It was based on this that the trial court determined that that American had a probable right to relief on its claims for fraud, tortious interference with contract, and misappropriation. So I would turn now to the preemption issue. The Airline Deregulation Act of 1978 is what is under discussion. The appellants turned this statute on its head by arguing that legislation intended to protect airlines from state regulation immunizes them from liability for their admitted misconduct. The district court properly rejected their invitation to preempt Americans' claims under the Airline Deregulation Act. The ADA's preemption provision protects airlines by, as we discussed, prohibiting states from enforcing a law related to a price, route, or service of an air carrier. And the Texas Supreme Court, in the Continental Airlines versus Kiefer case, set out a two-part test for applying the statute. The first question is, do the claims relate to a price, route, or service of an air carrier? And the second issue is whether the claims constitute enforcement of state law on an air carrier. Both prongs are necessary for preemption. Here, neither prong is satisfied. First, Americans' claims do not relate to a price, route, or service of an air carrier because the appellants admit that they are not an air carrier. This gets to the questions that Justice McCoy and Justice Livingston, you were raising. The conduct of an air carrier is not at issue here. The conduct at issue is that of Frequent Flyer Depot. So when we're talking about prices, we're not talking about an airline's prices. We are talking about Frequent Flyer Depot's prices. When we're talking about the services, we're not talking about the services of an air carrier. We're discussing the services of Frequent Flyer Depot, which include selling void airline tickets. But this is not as in American Airlines versus Woolens, where the plaintiffs were third parties who were bringing claims against against an air carrier. In Woolens, the conduct of an airline was at issue. The whole gravamen of the case was American Airlines' conduct in changing the terms of its Advantage program. And so the court decided that tort claims brought with respect to that conduct needed to be preempted because if the claims were adjudicated, it would amount to state regulation of an airline.
Well, why does it not relate to services of the air carrier? Because you're the ones that are telling us that the result of what they're doing affects your ability to serve your customers. Hence, their claim from a damage standpoint relates to prices, routes, or services of an air carrier.
It is true that the effect of the appellant's conduct is on American services.
Okay.
But if we take appellant's argument then to its logical conclusion, it would mean that the airlines would never have access to the state courts. Because if
well,
it's
now we're in apples and oranges here. You're pushing the two-prong test, and so why don't we focus on the two-prong test?
Okay. So under the first prong, conduct that's at issue is not the services of an air carrier. It is the services of appellants who are brokers. And it's not the prices of an air carrier. It's the prices of appellants.
But the word relate modifies all those words.
And it
claims
says,
relate to services. So you're just going to say that your damages are not included under the ambit of claims relating to services. And that's going to be your position.
Our position would be that the claims do not relate to the services of an air carrier. The claims relate to the services of a broker. And even if, and American does take that position, but even if in a general sense our claims relate to the services of an air carrier, because the Advantage program, we admit, is in the service of an air carrier, and that is the finding of Woolens. The difference between Woolens and here is that in Woolens, if the claims would have gone forward, then that would have been application of state law and policy on the services of an air carrier. Whereas here, if the claims go forward, there is no application of state law on an air carrier. The state law would be applied to appellants who are not air carriers. And that is important because, getting to my larger point, Justice McCoy, the slippery slope of the appellant's argument is that if you preempt Americans' claims, then the airline could literally never access the state courts. Because in every circumstance, Americans' claims, if it's suing someone, it's going to somehow relate to American.
And Americans, you don't like the goose and gander rule.
I'm sorry?
Oh, they don't have access to state courts, but you want access. I mean, so does that dog really hunt? You want it one way, but you don't want it the other?
Well, I think we would have to look at what Congress wanted.
Okay.
And what Congress intended with the Airline Deregulation Act was to prevent state regulation of air carriers. And so here, there's no threat of encroachment on the congressional objective of state regulation of air carriers. The only threat of encroachment is on the appellant's admitted wrongful conduct. Now, turning briefly to the second point that they raise, which is with respect to the subject matter jurisdiction question, this issue has been decided. As you know, Justice McCoy, state courts routinely exercise their jurisdiction to determine the ADA preemption issue. This is because preemption is an affirmative defense. Preemption is only jurisdictional when Congress clearly intended that claims be assessed exclusively in a federal forum. That is what the Mills versus Warner-Lambert case says. Nothing in the statute or the legislative history or the case law supports their subject matter jurisdiction argument that the Department of Transportation has exclusive jurisdiction. That provision that they refer to, which again, it's not the preemption provision. The preemption provision says nothing about the Department of Transportation. But the provision they refer to, 41712A, says that the Department of Transportation, when it determines it to be in the public interest, may exercise its jurisdiction to determine whether a ticket agent has engaged in unfair or deceptive practices. Courts make it clear may does not mean exclusive jurisdiction. Appellants admit their misconduct. American respectfully request that the court affirm the temporary injunction.
So,
thank you.
To make sure I understand it, states cannot regulate American Airlines, but states should help American Airlines enforce their rules when it helps their profit margin. Is that what you're saying?
The Congress intended that.
No, I'm asking you what your position is. States can't regulate the airlines, but should help the airlines enforce their own rules, the airlines' rules, to help their profit margin.
Yes.
The
only caveat I would say, if I may, Justice Daffino, is that we would enforce our rules regardless of whether it helps our profit margin. The idea is that there's no impediment to the airline being able to enforce its own rules.
Okay. Do you want the states to help you enforce your own rules but not tell you what to do?
The Congress asked that,
that's your argument.
Not exactly, that the states not be regulated by state law, that the airlines not be regulated by state law.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rotman. Rebuttal, Mr. Weston.
Ms. Rotman said repeatedly that the purpose of these statutes is to protect the air carriers. Justice Scalia, in Morales versus TWA, addressed that exact issue, looked at congressional intent, and said that Congress placed reliance on competitive market forces rather than regulation. It was competition. It wasn't protecting a particular interest, a particular industry. The other thing that is very important to understand in this case is that American Airlines is asking the court to take statutory language, language of the United States Supreme Court, language of the Texas Supreme Court, and say that those words, which are very clear, mean something different when they are dealing with American Airlines and other airlines as opposed to when it's dealing with everybody else. They want to define their words. They want you to adopt the definition of their words. Another thing that is very important is they have to show injury. They have to show damages. And what they have to do is plead and prove their damages. American Airlines, with regard to my client, said, numerous individuals have traveled on American using void travel tickets issued by my clients. They likely would have purchased tickets from American had they not obtained the void tickets. They likely displaced legitimate Advantage members or American customers. They lost goodwill because of the displacement. Yet the evidence is, taken from American Airlines' own documents, that during the period of time, American's load factor was such that it had empty seats. We didn't displace anybody. And in a very pointed statement, AMR The owner of American Airlines said in their filing with the Securities Exchange Commission, the company believes that displacement of revenue passengers is minimal given the company's load factors, ability to manage frequent flyer inventory, and the relatively low ratio of free award usage to total passengers boarded. What it's saying is, AMR is saying on behalf of American Airlines, their allegations are wrong. They haven't proven that they were injured. If they want to collect damages, they find out who we sold tickets to, figure out how many miles they have, and then go again to American Airlines, AMR's SEC reports, and they have a chart that tells you passenger revenue per available seat mile, operating expenses per available seat mile, net income. You take the miles, multiply it out, and you have the damages. That's an adequate remedy at law.
Which one of your issues addresses this damage question?
It is issue number 5. American was not injured.
All right.
And then issue number 6, the adequate remedy at law.
Are you suggesting that if American Airlines, let's say, has a problem with one of its vendors, there's a tortious interference claim with one of its vendors, it's supposed to rely on the Department of Transportation to address that?
No, sir.
Well,
That doesn't relate to competition. And it doesn't have a United States Supreme Court.
Competition with other airlines?
No, what it says is competition, and they call us a competitor. And there is a United States Supreme Court case that says.
Well, you can call a duck, and you know, we can go down that chicken and a duck thing, but they can call you a competitor, but that doesn't make you a competitor.
Well, that's the basis of the whole claim. We, as I said right at the beginning,
it's the basis of the whole claim.
They're saying that because of our actions, they're not selling tickets to somebody at a higher price. That was what I quoted that at the very beginning. They lost goodwill with the general public who must buy tickets for a higher price than American would have sold them. That means we, competing with them, sold them at a lower price. That's the definition of competition. We sold tickets in competition with American at lower prices. That's what they're upset about. That's what this whole thing is about, is they created a means whereby people can sell tickets and buy tickets at a lower price than American is willing to sell them. We didn't create that system. We're not the ones that's issuing these frequent flyer miles. But we do have people who own frequent flyer miles who want to sell them. And we have people who want to buy tickets and get them through frequent flyer miles. That's competition.
Thank you, Mr. Weston. Thank you, Ms. Rotman. We appreciate your arguments today and your briefing. Your case is submitted. That concludes our cases set for the 10 o'clock docket. If the clerk will now adjourn us, please.